state of Washington. We've been in touch with the governors. Today I spoke with a man that I happen to like. I spoke with Phil in New Jersey, and we're going to be doing something very meaningful in New Jersey. We're doing something. I spoke with J.B. Pritzker, called me today. We're going to be helping them out in Illinois. We're doing a lot of things in Florida. We're doing a lot of things. And between FEMA and the Army Corps of Engineers and the Admiral and your group, in terms of the purchasing, that's what he does. He purchases. He's supposed to be great. I'll tell you in about 2 days. But he's going to do a fantastic job. So we have an incredibly talented group of people. But, yeah, we'll be doing two things and three things at one time. Well, at the same time, though, we're going to be watching very closely the hotspots. We're going to be taking care and watching very closely our senior citizens, especially those with a problem or an illness. We're going to be watching them very, very closely. And we can do that and have an open economy, have an open country. And we have to do that because that causes other problems. And maybe it causes much bigger problems than the problem we're talking about now. You understand. Jeff, please.
This is live coverage of the Coronavirus Task Force on AM 770 KTTH Seattle. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show, the president, alongside the vice president, Attorney General Bill Barr, and Dr. Deborah Birx are up there on a day where we've seen over 100 new deaths announced related directly to the coronavirus. Now we return to the press conference as the president takes questions.
Look at the obsolete system that this administration inherited. It wasn't meant for this. It was meant for a small group of people. And even for that, it was not very good and very obsolete. We now have a testing program now that will hopefully be able to be used for many years into the future should we have another event like this. I don't think you'll have another event like this. This is very unique. You look back into time. You look back decades and decades. We can name them all, even if you go back 10 years. You know, you go back to 09, but that wasn't like this, as it turned out. But they lost a lot of people. We were early. We were early, Jeff, because of the fact that we closed early. That was a big move. Please, Kristen. Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
You had said previously, I think from this podium, that the virus could still be with us through July or August. By suggesting now that we might, or that the government might change these standards or these recommendations.
Well, it's not change. We're doing things. Yeah. This was a learning experience for the people of the country.
I'm just wondering if the time frame has changed for you. The July, August time frame of when you think the virus will be under control.
Well, I think we've learned a lot. I think that there's so much discipline now that we never had. Nobody ever said, don't shake hands. I did actually before I became a politician. Once I became a politician, then it's hard getting used to not doing it. Because, you know, you do it with everybody, with literally thousands of people a week. You're shaking hands with big groups of people. We've learned a lot. There's a great discipline that this whole country has learned, having to do with distancing, having to do with shaking hands. I think a lot of it's going to stay long after the virus is gone. I really think it's probably good practice anyway, but I think it's going to stay long after the virus is gone. But we have to open our country. Because that causes problems that, in my opinion, could be far bigger problems, far bigger. This is a medical, a severe medical situation that could cause problems far beyond the medical and then increase the medical problems to things that had nothing to do with this original medical problem. We can't let that happen to our country. We have the greatest country in the world. I'm not going to let that happen. But this 2 weeks that we have spent has been an incredible learning period and process. Please, Kristen.
I have two questions for you. Right. One, you said it's likely going to be weeks, not months, before you suggest easing these guidelines that you put out. Have any of the doctors on your team told you that's the right path to pursue?
We spoke to them today, and I was telling them that we have two things to look for. Don't forget the doctors. If it were up to the doctors, they may say, let's keep it shut down. Let's shut down the entire world, because, again, you're up to almost 150 countries. So let's shut down the entire world. And when we shut it down, that would be wonderful. And let's keep it shut for a couple of years. You know, you can't do that. And you can't do that with a country, especially the number one economy anywhere in the world, by far. Number one economy in the world. You can't do that. Because, well, it causes bigger problems than the original. That's why I talk about the cure being worse than the problem. We can't have the cure be worse than the problem. But what we have done, so this is not retracing. This isn't anything. We've done it really well because this two-week period has been good. And I'm not saying it ends at that time. You know, we have another 7 days or so. I'm not saying it ends at that time. But I am saying, sir, it's been like this incredible learning process. That's going to go into the future. That's going to go even as we open up our country. And we're going to be watching New York, and we're going to be watching California. We're going to be watching the state of Washington and other places. Illinois is becoming a hotspot. And we can do both. Now, we may quarantine. I mean, we will be quarantining many people in these areas. There are other areas that just aren't affected, or they're affected very little. And why would we close down 100% of the country? There are areas within New York where New York will be open, but there are areas within New York. Remember this, New York has the New York Stock Exchange. It has NASDAQ. It has the exchanges. To close the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ and with all of the great work they're doing, I mean, they've gone largely to computer. You look at the floor, it's incredible what they can do, but it's fully open. But we don't want to be doing that. But we can do what I'm saying basically is that we can do two things simultaneously. And we've had this incredible learning period. Plus, people have been in a period and they won't be calling, oh, gee, because I've got many, many people that now come to me and say, we get it. We think we can really do it now and do it while we're open. So at some point, we'll be setting some guidelines. We'll be setting some datelines. And we'll be announcing them in the not-too-distant future.
Have any of the doctors on your team endorsed easing the federal guidelines?
Not endorsed. We talked together, and I think they're okay with it, and I'm okay with it. But this could be a much bigger problem. This could create a much bigger problem than the problem that you start off with. Now, other nations are going to have to do what they're going to do, but they'll probably do something very similar. But in our case, much more so than anyone else, because of the magnitude of our economy, the tremendous size of what we've built and what we have and the jobs involved. You know, you have almost 160 million jobs in this country now, the most ever, by far the most ever. The number of jobs, almost 160 million. So we can't turn that off and think it's going to be wonderful. There'll be tremendous repercussions. There will be a tremendous death from that. Death. You know, you're talking about death, probably more death from that than anything that we're talking about with respect to the virus.
More death if we continue with these strict guidelines than if we ease them?
No, I think we're going to do them both. I think that's what I'm saying. I think we can do them both. Now, we haven't announced a date, but we're getting fairly close to coming up with a date, and it's a much shorter period of time than I've been hearing the news report. And I think everybody should be happy with that. But great knowledge was gained. Please.
Live coverage of the Coronavirus Task Force press briefing. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show.
He was talking about this, and he said that there are going to have to be some difficult trade-offs if you do ease these guidelines, because he wants the economy.
You mean with the Democrats you're talking about?
No. He was talking about how you said, you know, the cure shouldn't be worse than the problem, and he was talking about reopening the businesses, getting the economy going again. What are those difficult trade-offs?
Well, it is true. I mean, if he said, I didn't hear him say that, but if he said difficult trade-offs, sure, it's less convenient. Before you walk and you hop in the subway and you grab the handle and you go down to wherever you're going on Wall Street and you do all sorts of things and you go in and you open the doors going into your great buildings or into the exchanges. And now you're not going to have to maybe think about doing that, or you're going to think about doing it a different way. No, there are many trade-offs. It's a different life, and maybe it'll remain that way, frankly, after the invisible scourge is gone. Maybe it's going to stay that way. Not a bad thing to say that way, but no, there are trade-offs. There's no question about that. But I actually think I think in the end we're going to end up being bigger, better, and stronger. We have learned a lot. Please.
We're seeing an increase of cases in Latin America, in the Middle East.
It's true.
In some places in Asia. Are you considering a new round of travel ban?
No, we're not really. Something like that could happen, I guess, but we're not really. They thought we were going to have bans within the United States. We didn't do that. We're not going to have that. Hopefully that'll take care of itself. No, in Latin America, there's been an uptick. Yeah, please.
Mr. President, just quickly, a second question. What prompted you to say at the beginning of your comments that you're going to take care of the Asian Americans. Has there been something in particular that was?
Yeah, because it seems that there could be a little bit of nasty language toward the Asian Americans in our country, and I don't like that at all. These are incredible people. They love our country, and I'm not going to let it happen. So I just wanted to make that point. Because they're blaming China. People are blaming China. And they are making statements to great American citizens that happen to be of Asian heritage. And I'm not going to let that happen. Please.
You say you want to reopen the country, but most schools across the country are closed. Two states now are closed for the rest of the school year. How are parents supposed to go back to work and educate their children?
Yeah,
right,
the
now?
Governors of the various states will have a lot of leeway. If we open up, and when we open up, the governors in certain states, for instance, you go to some of the states I just mentioned, those schools are going to be open. Many cases are open now, but the schools are going to be open. In other cases, Governor Cuomo, Gavin Newsom of California, certain governors are going to maybe have a decision to make. Now, they may make a decision to keep them open in a certain part of New York and maybe in Westchester County or wherever it may be. They'll keep them closed. But they're going to have leeway. We're giving the governors a lot of leeway.
Do you agree with the decision to close it several months out at this point? These governors are saying they're expecting a peak in the next couple of months and have made the decision for
the governors are going to make those decisions. That's going to be up to the governors. And they're very capable. They'll be able to make the decisions. Please.
Sir, will you explain why a $2 trillion economic stimulus is needed if you are going to reopen the country in a period of weeks, not months?
Because the virus has had a big impact on our country. So we're going to give a stimulus so that the workers can live their life. It was not their fault. It wasn't the workers' fault. And we are going to give a kick so that it's a kick. And this way, we think the workers can get a fair start. The small businesses we're taking very good care of. We want to take care of these small businesses. They really are the engine of this country. A lot of people don't know that. You know, everyone thinks of these great, big, beautiful businesses, who, by the way, have been very badly hurt also. But the small businesses have really historically been the engine, and they still are the engine of the country. And you'd be amazed. The workers love those businesses, and the workers contact us, and they want us to help those businesses because that's where they've made their living. That's where they, you know, they've been paid a lot of money over the years. And, you know, you've been seeing what's happened over the last 3 years where salaries and wages have gone up very substantially for those workers. And then we got caught by this sudden craziness coming into our country and coming all over the world. So we need to make sure that the companies are strong and that the workers are strong. And that's what we're doing. And, you know, hopefully the Republicans and Democrats are going to be able to make a deal. And they're actually fairly close, but we'll see what happens. Please.
But does it still need to be $2 trillion is my question. Can it be
smaller? One of the things, you're going to have to save companies that have been shattered. You're going to have to save various. I mean, you know a lot of the companies yourselves. We have a company that was, I think, the greatest company in the world, named Boeing. Boeing's going to need some help. Now, Boeing had some difficulty before. That's unlike others. We have other companies that didn't have a problem coming in. Boeing had the obvious problem that everybody knows about from a little more than a year ago, a double problem, and it was a big one. And then on top of it, as they're getting ready to really show their stuff, on top of it, we all get hit by this. And obviously, the airlines are going to have a problem, but the airlines aren't going to be buying from Boeing or from anybody else right now because of this difficulty. So we have to work with the airlines. We have to work with the cruise lines. We have to work with the companies like a Boeing, because Boeing's a potentially, again, a great company. It had a very rough period of 13 months, a very rough period, a horrible period, an unbelievable period. If you would have told me this would have happened to Boeing, I wouldn't have believed it, because to me it was, you know, truly one of the truly great, probably almost 1 point of GDP, if you can think of that. It's hard to believe that a company could have that kind of an impact. But Boeing, we have to work with it for two reasons. Number one, it's a great company that we have to save. Number two, it produces unbelievable numbers of jobs. And so, you know, the numbers have to be reflective of that kind of a thing. Please, you know what I'm going to do? We have wonderful people behind us that are working very hard. And we want Bill to get back to the Department of Justice, and we want the Admiral to start going and doing the job. And the same thing with Deb. If anybody would have any questions, maybe I'll ask Mike to stay around, but if anybody would have any questions for the group, and otherwise I'll let them go back to work. Please.
We just clarify, Dr. Birx. We seem to be talking about different geographical slopes on this. The curve would be changing. And yet you just said that 28% numbers coming out of New York gives an indication that we don't quite know when the seeds, to use your metaphor, were planted. So how confident are you on the start dates of each curve for each of the geographical areas that the president seems to be indicating we'll be adjusting the policy for?
So that's a very good question. So what we do know is now we can backtrack from people who get very seriously ill to when they probably got infected versus when they were exposed. And so when you start backing out each of those pieces, when you start seeing hospitalized patients, you know that the virus has probably been there for 3 to 4 weeks, substantially circulating within the population. So that's what we're looking for. Now, as all of our testing is improved, and we want to really applaud the group who has worked on it. You know, if you look at the pandemic flu preparedness, all of this was built on a flu platform. It was never, ever thought that you'd have a simultaneous respiratory disease hitting at exactly the same time as your flu hits in the country. And so when you're doing all of your flu surveillance, you could have small cases of these pneumonias and flu-like illnesses characterized as a flu-like illness for the last 4 to 6 weeks. And so that's really a caution to all of us. And so when we get through all of this, we'll be looking at each of the pandemic preparedness plans. A long way of saying, we know Washington State is a little bit ahead of New York because of the hospitalization records. What we will get to as a country with the amount of testing that will be available is being able to do what the president talked about simultaneously doing containment contact tracing at the same time you're doing mitigation. And I think right now we put everything into mitigation. Yet if we geographically get specific data by zip codes and counties, we'll be able to approach this in a very laser-focused way, making sure that what we're doing in each of those areas is absolutely appropriate for where they are in their own little bell-shaped curve.
Dr. Birx, when will the government roll out the antibody tests so people can know possibly if they've been exposed?
So several of them have come to the FDA, I believe. Obviously, that's something I am very interested in for two reasons. One, it will give us a retrospective on where these infections were, who was actually infected, and how really asymptomatic versus mild versus all of that comes into the spectrum. Secondly, by people who have high titers of those antibodies, those can become our solution with plasmapheresis for those in need and the making of hyperimmune globulin. So knowing who they are becomes really critical. But I think we're still a couple of weeks out. I have to go back and talk to the FDA where each of these are, because this is what saved us with when you do flu swabs, when you do strep throat swabs, and now where you do an HIV test. So these are the kinds of tests that we know will be critical in the future. I wanted to say one other thing, because you see a lot of numbers out there about 70% of the population is going to get infected or 60% of the population based on those models. Understand that the way you get to that number is you do nothing and it goes through three cycles. So they're talking about this cycle that we're currently in, another cycle in 2021, and a third cycle in 2021-22 in order to get that level of population infected. And you know we will have vaccines most likely by the 21-22 season. And we're going to hopefully have therapeutics in the fall of the next season. So the reason we're so much focused on blunting the curve for this piece is if the virus comes back, we'll have much more facility both for diagnosis, testing, monoclonal antibodies, treatments, and then the vaccine.
And Dr. Birx, a question about the serology blood tests, which some people said hold some real promise here. When will those be FDA approved, and when will they be widely available?
So that's what she was just asking about. So these IgGs and IgM, both point of care, I can tell you it would be no problem making ELISA today. But then you're drawing blood, you're processing blood, you're running plates. That's what we did in the past. We really want a finger prick type assay where you can just put a finger prick on and get your IgG and IgM. So that's what we're working on right now.
So realistically, how long until that's approved and available would you?
I can't answer because I have to look at where each of the companies are that are in their development processes.
That sounds like a while then.
Well, there's some that are developed now that they were using in Singapore. So we're looking at those to see how those work. So we're looking at those, but, you know, we're very quality-oriented because we want to make sure we don't give people false negatives or false positives.
I have a question for you. So we have a lot of very angry media all around this room, and they want one of these seats. But because of social distancing, we are keeping them empty. And they are keeping them empty. Will there ever be a time when all of those really angry, angry people who don't like me much to start off with, but now they really don't like me, will there ever be a time when these seats are full, like full to the brim like it used to be, where people are almost sitting on each other's lap? And this whole row over here is packed, and now they're outside wanting to get in, and they're very jealous of all of these reporters. Will we ever have that again, or is that something that will be, you know, it'll look like this forever?
So we're learning a lot about social distancing and respiratory diseases. And I think those are the discussions we have to have in the future. It was what you were talking about, changing our whole behavior patterns of what we touch and being conscious of that. I remember when I was worried Saturday morning, I was trying to think, what all did I touch on Friday? Did I touch a doorknob? Did I do this? Did I do that? Did I not wash my hands? I mean, you go through this whole piece, did I touch my face by accident? So I think this awareness that we all now have that we didn't have before, where we would have pushed through that door or turned that doorknob because we were in such a hurry. Now I think all of us think twice. I think all of you think twice.
But when the virus is gone, we'll... the people be allowed to sit next to each other again, in your opinion, in a tight room with a tight...
I don't know. You'll have to look and see if we have a new respiratory piece. Certainly, this is the way we set up every clinic all around the world when we're worried about TB and TB transmission.
Dr. Burke, I'm wondering if you could comment on the new measures that Britain has put into place. Also, Germany has said... it doesn't want to have crowds of less than two people except for families, which is a pretty restrictive number. Does that inform your thinking as you are coming up with advice for this next period for the president and the vice president?
The president and vice president have asked us to look at every single scenario in every single country. Because the more data we have, the more our decisions can be completely data informed and really understanding what impact that has. I mean, we're interested right now. I mean, Italy obviously waited until about March 7th. The virus had been circulating for almost 4 weeks before actually going into that methodology. But for the first time, it looks like their mortality rates are starting to decline, which would be an illustration that things that they did 2 and 3 weeks ago may actually have an impact. Those are the kinds of data we're looking at very carefully, as well as very careful data within the United States of exactly where the virus is, what's the attack rate, has it moved out of its more confined geography, and really looking at each of those pieces of information. It's a lot of data to go through.
What do you make of Germany and Britain's moves?
Well, I think if you remember just a week ago, Britain had a very different approach. So everybody is adapting to their data. I haven't looked at the data that informed that decision, so I can't really comment on how they got to that decision there or in Germany.
Just to be clear, do you agree with the president's push to reopen the country? He said some of his doctors that he's talking to about this, he says, I think they're okay with it. Are you okay with that?
What the president has asked us to do is to assemble all the data and give him our best medical recommendation based on all the data. That's what he's asked us to do. And so that's what we'll be doing this week. We were going to have to do it this week anyway, because we had to make a decision come Monday about the 15 days to reduce social spread. So this is consistent with our mandate to really use every piece of information that we can in order to give the president our opinion that's backed up by data, not our perception, but our opinion that's backed up by data.
What you're witnessing right now is live, in real time, media members trying to create a narrative of Donald Trump ignoring the doctors.
And that's really critical. I will never speculate on data. I will have to see the data in order to really understand it.
And I think a big factor is the mortality rate. We're talking about the mortality rate. You know, when we first started, people were thinking about 3 and 4%, and now we're talking about a much lower number than that. I think it's a number that will be a lot different than people thought.
The mortality rate is driven almost exclusively, as we have talked about, by people with pre-existing conditions and older. So that has become, from the very beginning, that was our emphasis. You know, when we started 2 or 3 weeks ago talking with one another, our focus has been on how do we protect those with pre-existing conditions and the elderly. And I think these steps were about protecting with pre-existing conditions. So the whole key to changing the mortality rates is not just the hospital care, but preventing them from going into the hospital to begin with, because you don't want them to be infected.
It's much lower than we originally thought. I mean, frankly,
yes,
it's a lot lower.
Do you have an estimate? Do you have a number?
Well, you know what the estimate in Wuhan was originally. It was over 3%. When they look outside of Wuhan, it was about 0.7%. It depends very much. In South Korea, it was about 0.7, 0.8%. But I don't want... That's like a tyranny of averages. And I... You know, that's not having... That's probably missing 50, 60% of the data because no one was testing asymptomatics. Remember, in every country, you had to be symptomatic to get a test. So we, you know, we're making case fatality rates when we're missing a significant part of the data. So if anything, it will go lower. But I don't want people, that should not be reassuring, because the death rates escalate with age and pre-existing conditions. So I really want to be clear that although it may be very low if you're under 40, or very low if you're under 50, and very low if you're under 70, there is an inflection curve. The average age of the person who's dying in Italy is in the mid-80s. So there is really a significant issue in our older generation that we feel strongly about protecting.
But Doctor, because it's just very interesting, the whole thing. It's an incredible subject. When somebody is very sick, they go to a doctor, go to a hospital, they record it, they're very sick, and then they live or they don't live, see what happens. But when somebody isn't very sick at all, I've heard people that they don't even know they had it, and they're healing. Then I've heard people they have like a cold, or they have a running nose, or even people that stay home and they think they have the flu, or in some cases they think they have a really bad case of the flu. But all of those people, that vast majority of, I mean, beyond vast majority of people, they're not reporting. They're not calling the doctor. They're not calling him. They're just getting better. So you would think it would have to be, because the people that are sick are going to a doctor, or they're going someplace and they're going to say, make me better. The people that are just short of that, and people that aren't even, I mean, you know, you have many people where they literally don't even know that they have it. So now you're building up the number of cases that we talked about before, and yet, so you don't know you don't know how many there are. It could be a vast number.
Right.
But what you do know is all the people that are really sick, because all of the people that are really sick are going to a doctor in some form, and the doctor is reporting it in all cases. So,
but that's why your question about the antibody test is so critical, because that will give us really a much better baseline to really understand.
So, Mr. President, when you talk about how it could be a much, much bigger problem, you said that at several stages on whether or not we keep these guidelines in place. You talked about higher death. Are you talking about suicide? Like, help us understand.
I'm talking about many forms.
Is the risk here a depression? Is that what you're getting at?
We're talking about tremendous... Look, number one, it's the country itself. You're talking about tremendous disruption economically. But you're talking about massive depression, massive numbers of suicide.
You mean economic depression?
No, I'm talking. No, I'm not talking about economic. Although you could be talking about that too.
So you
what I'm talking about is
depression.
People suffering massive depression because they had a fantastic job, and now they have no idea, you know, what's going on. Now, here's the good news: if they get the bill passed, we're taking care of those people. We're going to really take good care of those people beyond what any country has done for people. But there's never been anything like this. No, I'm talking about where people suffer massive depression, where people commit suicide, where tremendous death happens. Now, in addition to that, we're talking about economic, where you really hurt a country. It could take years and years to recover. And the longer you stay out, the harder it is to recover. I happen to think that you're going to have, they call it the V. I think you're going to have a very big bounce, you know, very big bounce back. I think it's going to be very big. We'll see. Well, I think the bill should pass. It should pass quickly. Take care of our workers. Take care of the companies that pay those workers. Help those companies over this rough patch. But the longer it takes, the harder it is to come back. I'd like to be able to bounce back to where we were. And ultimately, I think we're going to be even further than that. But I'm just saying that the what's happening when I say the cure, and the cure could be worse than the problem itself, right? That's what we can't let that happen. We can't let that happen. We've learned so much, and so many good things are going to happen for our country. We can't let this continue to go on. So what we're doing is we're meeting with the doctors, Dr. Fauci, Dr. Birx, and others, and we've already started the discussion. And I can say that, you know, I'm a student like your students. We're all learning this together. I learned a lot from Deborah. I learned a lot from Tony. I learned a lot from a lot of people that this has been their life's work. I've learned a lot. We're going to come up with a date. And we're going to do two things. We can do two things at one time. At the same time, we're going to be very vigilant. We're going to be so vigilant in terms of all of the things that we have to do that we've been talking about for the last 2 weeks ad nauseum. And I think it's going to be ultimately a far better solution for our country. Yeah, please, go ahead.
What advice is Dr. Fauci?
Yeah, well, why don't you go back? We want her to go
listening
back
to live coverage of the coronavirus task force. They're holding a briefing. We're in excess of an hour at this point. We're going to continue our live coverage right here on the Jason Rand Show on KTTH.
So there's still 1 week left to go and 15 days to slow the spread. Doesn't talk of reopening the government quickly undermine that? I mean, why would anyone today still social distance or not run out to
actually,
see the church?
Actually, it should reinforce it. Because if people know that we're considering and trying to understand the impact of the good work that they have done, I think it reinforces them to do good work for the next whatever it is, days, weeks in the future. Because it says to them, we're looking very carefully at the impact that the work that you did, the selflessness that you brought to this, the ability to stay home with your fabulous children, your ability to social distance, the ability to give up on going to restaurants and just having takeout, all of those sacrifices, the ability of your protecting our elder generation, the greatest generation, and making sure they're safe in nursing homes but not seeing them. All of us have made sacrifices. I haven't seen my grandchildren in 3 weeks. I know other people are like that they have really made those personal sacrifices. What we're asking every American to do is to make those personal sacrifices for these next week and now so that we can evaluate the impact of that sacrifice. So I think, if anything, it strengthens the willpower to say, yes, I can do this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. President, where is Dr. Fauci today?
Go ahead. One second, please.
Sir, one thing some public health officials have said would be helpful is to open back up the ACA exchanges so that people who are worried about perhaps getting treatment could go sign up for insurance now, even though the open enrollment period is open. That's something you can do with
Well, it is. It's something we're talking to a lot of people about. We'll see what happens, but we're talking to people about it. Go ahead, please.
Where is Dr. Fauci right now? Why is he not at this briefing? Will he attend future ones?
I was just with him for a long time. He's at the task force meeting right now. We have a task force meeting. He was there.
Does he agree with you about the need to reopen the economy soon?
Well, he doesn't not agree. I mean, we had a long talk, and he understands it's tremendous. There's a tremendous cost to our country, both in terms of lives and in terms of economics, and in terms of many, many years of rebuilding something that was a fine-tuned machine. It was nobody's fault. It just happened. This horrible virus came from wherever, and it just happened. It just happened. He fully understands that. No, he's a good man. I like Dr. Fauci a lot, just so you understand. No, he's not here because we really weren't discussing what he's best at, but he'll be back up very soon. Yeah, please. And we'll be discussing dates and times with him. And we are talking about I don't want to use the word abbreviated because so much has been gained by what we've done, but we're talking about not during the period, you know, during the 14 or 15 days, but not too long after that.
Mr. President,
which I think is going to make a lot of people happy. It's going to make a lot of companies happy. It's going to make a lot of workers happy. Yeah, John?
Mr. President, so ultimately, will you take Dr. Fauci's recommendation on this, or are you thinking he's just looking at one set of inputs?
I would certainly, he's very important to me, and I will be listening to him. I'll be listening to Deborah, who you just spoke to. I'll be listening to other experts. We have a lot of people that are very good at this. And ultimately, it's a balancing act. But, you know, the expression, we can do two things at one time. And we've got an incredible country. We have to keep it that way. And that includes not just economics, that also includes life and death. We have to keep it that way.
Mr. President, on the social distancing, you're talking about social distancing amongst us reporters, and you mentioned that one of our own has come down or potentially come down. Even if someone does come down in the White House press corps, would you pledge the American people that you'll keep this room open? We're clearly 6 feet apart.
Well, I've gotten to like this room. This room is very convenient. I can say from the standpoint of being president of the United States, this has been a very convenient room for all of us. You people have set up, so I never even thought of closing it. So you're asking me a question that I never thought in terms of closing it. Can you give me a good reason to close it? We could build a larger room. I don't want to make commitments like that because it's, you know, not something I've ever really thought about. There are certain people that would like to see a larger room built. We need a larger room. Other presidents didn't need such a large room, but we need a larger room. And there are some people, but it's not something that is really on my mind, to be honest with you. Yes, please.
All right, so quarter two. We know it's going to be brutal. Who are you listening to? Where is the brain trust to help get us through that period? And also, has your opinion of the chair...
Which period?
Quarter two, the second quarter, J.P. Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, they're all predicting a pretty dire second quarter. So who are you listening to? Where's the brain trust? You have all these medical advisors.
I think we're listening to many people. I mean, that was my world. I know many of those people. I have many people that are friends of mine, some enemies also, by the way. But, you know, it's been a good world for me. I like that world. I like those people. They're tough and they're smart. But I listen to many of them. Ultimately, they all go into that computer. And I say, this is what we're going to do. I have to make a decision. This is a very important man right here to my right, our great vice president, because he's got a great instinct about things, too. So I'm going to be listening to Mike. He's headed up the task force, I think, brilliantly. I think it's going to go down as that because he's really done a job. He's been... not only has he been good, he's been soothing. He's really been great for the American public to watch it. And I mean that, and I mean that in the most positive way. There is a solidity with Mike that you don't find in many people. He's been soothing. He's been good for the American public. They have confidence in him. I think he's done an incredible job. And his advice is very, very important to me. So he's going to be making, I mean, he didn't come from that world, the world of finance, but he understands the world of finance. He was a great governor in Indiana. They did very well financially, too.
So you won't go as even one name of someone else you're listening to?
Well, I could give you a whole list, and we'll probably even set up committees. I'd rather not give you one because then I'm going to leave out. I have spoken to so many people.
I turned on the spigot today.
What?
Are you happier with the Fed now that he's turned on the spigot?
I am happy with him, yes. I really think he's caught up, and he's done the right thing. And I think ultimately we will be rewarded because of the decision he made over the last. He's really stepped up over the last week. And I have to tell you, I called him today, and I said, Jerome, good job. You really did it. It might be. He was, you know... a little bit slower than I would have liked in the sense of what he was doing. Now, other people might have liked it. But today I called up Jerome Powell and I said, Jerome, you've done a really good job. I was proud of him. That took courage. And ultimately, you're going to see the fruits. Now, he's not finished. I mean, he's got other arrows in the quiver or whatever they say. I will tell you, he's got plenty of arrows. But, no, I'm very happy with the job he did.
Mr. Vice President, you said that you'd bring the Secretary of Education here either yesterday or today. Why isn't she here today, and can we expect her this week? Also yesterday, you said you'd have some guidance for us on people who had potentially been exposed to the virus returning to work sooner. Do you still expect that guidance?
Yes. Thank you for the question. I spoke to the Secretary of Education today, and we're going to have her at the podium very soon. The Department of Education has created a very easy waiver application for every state. It's virtually an automatic application for states that want to be excused from national standardized testing requirements. We reviewed that with all of the governors today. And also what's called distance learning. The accreditation process for higher education, the Secretary of Education at the President's urging, has loosened the rules around distance learning. You're seeing many colleges and universities embracing distance learning now, putting it into practice. We've allowed for that. But also the Department of Education is setting up a website and best practices information for K through 12 distance learning. And she actually told me that the state of Florida and New Hampshire are really setting the pace on distance learning for K-12. My wife is an elementary school teacher. Obviously, there's different challenges for distance learning for K through 12 students, particularly younger kids. But the Department of Education is determined to continue to make those best practices available. We talked about the website that's being built, and she'll be coming and making a presentation on that. Because as the President reflected a little bit ago, as Dr. Birx did, we understand there's a lot of kids out of school, but parents are anxious. A lot of kids out of college and university, like my daughter, who's been dismissed from what remains of this semester of grad school, but is still doing the work, and the Department of Education is working earnestly to make that a reality.
We'll see her this week.
I'm sorry?
We'll see her this week?
Yes, I'll have her here this week. Given the issues that we were dealing with today with the Attorney General, we thought it might be just as timely in a few days. With regard to the guidance that you asked about, the President's Coronavirus Task Force is in the process of reviewing recommendations from CDC. We're working with the Department of Homeland Security. We'll be bringing those to the President as recommendations of approval. We're specifically looking at people that work in critical infrastructure, people in law enforcement, people in critical transportation. You can go right now to the Department of Homeland Security's website for a very useful definition of critical infrastructure. And if you look at the second page of 15 days to slow the spread, you'll see the President's recommendation for this 15 days is for people to stay home from work whenever possible, except for people working in critical infrastructure. And the guidance that we're looking forward to unpacking is how people who may have come into contact with someone that tests positive for coronavirus would be able to, if they have no symptoms, would be able to return to work, wear a mask for a certain period of time, but otherwise go back to business. It's a focus on critical infrastructure jobs. We should have that guidance before the President and before the public tomorrow.
Mr. President, we have understandably a patchwork of plans.
I just want to say, while we're thinking about it, China has very much stepped up, as you probably know, the agricultural purchases from our farmers and some other purchases, too. So they have a difficult time also right now, but they very much stepped up their purchases and significantly. So we're very happy about that. The other thing, you know, I'm standing here, in this case with our Vice President, trying to let you ask anything you want having to do with the subject, which frankly is pretty much all anyone cares about right now. But because I think it's very important. I don't want to stand here for 2 hours and do this, but I think it's important that, you know, I call it get it out of your system. Give us any question about it, because I think it's important for the public to know. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to answer two questions and leave. We want to answer your questions. That's why we're doing this for so long. And I think it gives our country confidence, and it gives we're all gaining knowledge. This has been an unbelievable process, but we're all getting out. So I want to, you know, stay here. Sometimes we're here for 2 hours and we're answering questions. At least you will say that I'm very transparent. I think you're going to have a hard time saying he is not transparent. But we take a lot of questions from you. Unfortunately, some of them are repetitive, and some of them are fantastic questions. Some of these questions are great. Some of the questions lead to us solving a problem. You bring up problems that people didn't know existed. But I just want to let you know, so we're doing this so that we can be transparent, so that we can get everything out. Go ahead, please.
Mr. President, we have a patchwork of plans, understandably, at the moment. Are you coordinating an economic response with the leaders of the G7 at the moment? You are?
Yeah, we're very, very close to them. We had a couple of great talks, plus I've spoken to a number of them individually. We're very, very closely aligned. Please.
One for the Vice President, real quickly, and then one for you. Vice President Pence, we're talking about those self-swab tests. When will those be available? They said this week, but do you know which day, and do you know where they're going?
The FDA just announced that decision, my understanding is that they'll be now going directly to market. I'll have a good estimate for you on timeline, but and what the president has charged us to do at the task force is to promote as much creativity and as much innovation as possible. And frankly, Dr. Hahn, as the president said at the FDA, has done a remarkable job going through the review and approval process for these new methodologies. Really in record time. We reflected a little bit ago about the fact that we're pretty sure we set a record. I think it was 62 days to be in the phase one clinical trials of a vaccine that's actually in clinical trials today. This new approval from a study done by United Health Group and the Gates Group means that now self-collected nasal swabs will become available. We're going to be working through FEMA with governors around the country to make sure and distribute those methods, as well as the swabs or any other supporting material, and get those into this vast array of labs that are now stood up around the country.
That's going to make a big difference, too, because that really is a process that's easy, as opposed to the current process, which is not, as I've said, it's not pleasant.
My other question for you, I just want to get clarity on this. If we get to next week, we're deciding, you're deciding what to do with these guidelines, whether to ease them or reinstate them for another 15 days. Will you follow the advice of Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci if they say you should maintain them
and
for
others,
2 more weeks?
And then ultimately I have to make a decision. But I certainly listen to them. I listen to a number of people. And I have a lot of respect for Dr. Fauci and for Dr. Birx. And I'll be listening to them and others that we have that are really doing a good job, John.
But are you worried that if you do this too quickly, if you lift these restrictions too quickly, the virus will start spreading unabated? And how can you be sure that that's not going to happen?
Well, you know, we have now a system, and the system's in place. And we have two very, very powerful alternatives that we have to take into consideration. And as I said, one of the things that has really gotten me thinking about this, number one, I'm looking at what's going on. And, you know, life is fragile and economies are fragile. But one of the things is the mortality rate, John. When we first started this, nobody knew anything about this particular virus. Very, very little. I mean, we started, if we were hearing numbers of 5%, that's an astronomical number. When the flu is 0.001 and 2 and 3, right? And so 5% would be an astronomical number. Now we're seeing numbers that may be less than 1, and that's not including the exercise that I just went through where many people don't report. So everybody getting very sick is reporting, but nobody getting, you know, not very sick, and that should be part of that equation. So that just keeps reducing the number. So the mortality rate is a, you know, that's a big, to me, that's a very big factor. When we were hearing 3 and 4%, remember we had one day where we thought it was 5%, and we were getting a lot of bad numbers from countries that, I don't know why, but we were getting a lot of bad numbers. I do wish, our relationship's very good with China, but I wish they could have told us about this a little bit sooner. You know that. But the mortality rate's a big thing for me because I think we're very substantially under 1% now. It's still terrible. It's still the whole thing. The whole concept of death is terrible. But there's a tremendous difference between something under 1% and 4 or 5 or even 3%. So that's something that we're learning now. And I think the number may be lower than people think because of what I've been saying. Yeah, please.
Mr. President, have you instructed Secretary Mnuchin and the others working on this bill with Congress to meet some of the demands the Democrats have made?
Well, I thought we had a deal last night, and then the Democrats changed the deal. So we had a deal last night that was going to be phenomenal for the workers, which is my number one aim. I want to take care of the workers. And we had a deal. I was pretty sure we had a deal last night. If you would have told me at a certain time, like about 9 o'clock, I would have told you we pretty much have a deal. And then all of a sudden it changed fairly rapidly. And, you know, it was unacceptable. It would have been bad for our country. And they were asking for things that would have not been good. I mean, things that bore no relationship to what we're talking about. We said, that's not the game. We can't play that game. So, we'll see. Look, the Democrats do want to make a deal. But, Jeff, I thought we had a deal last night.
And if you come further into this process weeks or months from now and decide that further stimulus is needed, will you be able to work with Speaker Pelosi on that?
I'll work with anybody to help the American people. I will. I don't care who it is. I'll work with anybody if I feel I'm going to help the American people and the American worker. Yeah, please.
Mr. President, some states are still reporting a shortage of materials needed to actually process the tests. So what is the administration doing to get all the states the materials that they need?
Well, you just saw the Admiral, and you just saw the FEMA people, and you just saw the Army Corps of Engineers. And, you know, we're building hospitals in New York and California and state of Washington and New Jersey. I just made a commitment to Phil that we're going to help him out with some of the areas in New Jersey, which is very important, a great state. So we're doing a great job, and we're there to help the governors. But, you know, the governors are on the front line, and they can do some of it themselves. Governor Cuomo, he's been working very hard, and he worked with me on the hospitals and medical centers, because it's not just hospitals, it's called hospital. And another is medical centers, of which we're building numerous for New York. And we have it all laid out. We have Javits Center, and then we have other locations throughout the state. And I think it's really a great plan. And we're going to have FEMA and the Army Corps of Engineers involved. And I've worked with them, you know. You know, we're building a wall. We're up to over 150 miles of wall on our southern border, which is now turning out to be even more important than we originally thought. But I always thought it was very important having borders. And so I'm working with the Army Corps of Engineers, and I see what they do and how they do it. And that's what that used to be my business. And I know it very well. And they're very professional. They're really good. So you're going to see a lot of good things happening in many states, beyond the states I just mentioned. In many states, we're working with Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida. We're working with Governor McMaster, right, in South Carolina, where they have a little bit of a breakout, not by comparison, but a little bit. We're working with many, many governors in many, many states. Actually, states where you almost would think that they have it under pretty good control. They've done a great job. But we're working with many states, and that's primarily FEMA and the Army Corps of Engineers.
Mr.
And they're
President,
capable of doing it.
Mr. President, back to the stimulus. Can I ask a question on behalf of my Radio Pool colleague, Tamara Keith from NPR?
Sure.
She asked me to ask this to you.
Sure.
You just mentioned that there were some things last night that were unacceptable, which would have been bad for the country, that the Democrats were bringing into the stimulus conversation. Her question was, what provisions would you absolutely not support in this plan right now?
Well, a lot of the provisions that they wanted, like stock buybacks, I agree with that. That's good with me. I mean, I don't like them buying back stock. I like them spending money on airplanes and on their employees and their real business, not buying back stock. And I don't know if that provision is going to be put in one way or the other, but I'm all for it. And many Republicans, I can tell you, are for it. And I think many Democrats are for it. But they were putting that out like it was a problem last night. Not a problem for me, I can tell you that. Please.
She also wanted to know, how much would you want the cash relief directly for Americans? What number would you like to see?
Well, I think what you're talking about right now is at least $3,000 per family of four. Mm-hmm. Isn't that correct? $3,000 for a family of four, which is bold. And if this continued, we have to build this up, and if this continued, we'll do something else and we'll do more at a later date. But that's a big number. If you remember, they were talking about $500 and $600, and we are all for that. As of this moment, it's $3,000 for a family of four. Please go ahead.
When you're looking at some of the economic headwinds that we're facing, I'm wondering if one of the things you're concerned about is the strength of the dollar. And if there's something that we should do to address that, including possible.
Well, we have a very strong dollar. And, you know, a strong dollar is good in many ways, but it's also tough in many ways because it makes trade much harder. It makes it much harder for Caterpillar Tractor and other companies to sell their goods to Europe or China or wherever they may be sold. So having a strong dollar is good, but it really sounds good. But the truth is it makes certain things like trade much tougher. And our dollar, I don't know if you've seen, but our dollars remain very strong, especially against other currencies, very, very strong, which, again, makes that trading more difficult. But there's something nice about having a strong dollar, right? You know, no matter what, a president decides to have a strong dollar. But it does make trading more difficult.
Just to go back to Stimus, you're confident you're going to get a deal?
Well, I think the Democrats want a deal, and I think we want a deal. So it would be very foolish if they didn't make a deal. The American public is demanding it. I can tell you the Republicans want to make a deal, and we want to make a deal that's good for the workers, good for the country. And I really believe the Democrats want to make a deal, but they have to stop asking for things that bear no relationship to what we're talking about.
And you've had a lot of laudatory things
that are actually bad, that are actually not good for the country.
You've been very laudatory of the Democratic governors. Governor, you know, you mentioned Governor Cuomo, you mentioned some others.
Yeah.
If you get a stimulus bill, I'm wondering if you'll extend this bipartisan goodwill to Speaker Pelosi and invite her here for a signing ceremony.
Well, let's see what happens. I have to see what happens. Right now, we don't have a deal, but I think we're very close. I mean, when I left, which was quite a while ago now, because, again, we're trying to answer every question. So there's no it'd be nice if you were just exhausted and said, that's it. We can't do anymore. But there's always hands up. But and maybe one of those questions is great and unique. But no, look, I want what's good for the country. And if that means meeting, I think that's great. I just want what's good for the country, great for our workers, great for the citizens of the United States. That's all. It's pretty. Well, it's been a little while. Yeah, please.
Both you and the vice president have been tested for the virus. Also, Mrs. Pence. Has the first lady been tested?
Yes.
And?
She's great. She's fine.
Negative.
Okay. Negative.
One of the sticking points on the stimulus, who's going to hold Treasury accountable for this $500 billion corporate rescue fund?
Well, you need that to help all of these companies that have a chance of not being companies anymore. And that's going to be a good thing for the country because deals will be made, and we're talking to certain people, some of the greatest people in the history of Wall Street, frankly, where when they do a deal, we'll have stock for America. We'll take back stock for the United States. We'll do, at the same time, most importantly, we'll keep those companies healthy. But we can also make incredible deals for the country so that that number will increase exponentially. I mean, this is a great
thing. The fund is about the lack of oversight. The Treasury having this unilateral authority to dole out all of this money.
Well, look, I'll be the oversight. I'll be the oversight. We're going to make good deals. We make good deals. But these companies need it, even if it was just a simple loan, which would be. But we can do better than that. And the companies are willing to do better than that. I mean, they got hit. Most of these companies, it was through no fault of their own. There are a couple where it was, you know, they were troubled before they came in. We talked about one. It had trouble. Nobody can believe it, actually, in that one. But these companies are through no fault of their own. They have difficulty. I mean, 2 weeks ago, these companies were among the most solid institutions in the world. You'd want to buy their bonds. Their bonds were rated AAA or whatever their highest rating is today. And now all of a sudden they have difficulty because they've been closed up. So you need something to keep them going. But that money is not going to be wasted money. That money is going to be seen, and we could multiply that number by many times coming back to the American public. That could be a phenomenal thing. But most importantly, it's going to keep these great engines of jobs and ingenuity going. Very important. Yeah, how about one or two more and we'll go.
Thank you, sir. Are there things you regret in the way you handled the crisis so far? Are there words you regret?
I don't think so. You know, I'm looking forward. I don't look back. I guess there's always something everybody regrets. There are things in your life you regret. We all regret things, but I really like to look forward. I'm a person that looks a forward thinker, I guess they would say. No, I think that we've handled it really well. It seems to be the American public thinks that we've handled it well, if you look at polling data. But I'm not interested in myself. I'm interested in the American people. We have to get this going. We have millions and millions of jobs that were solid as a rock 3 weeks ago. And today, there could be questions. And the faster we get it going, the more likely it is that those stores, little businesses, big businesses, medium-sized businesses, open up. And we'll get it going very fast. I really believe this is a pent-up demand. I think that as soon as we say, let's go, and it's going to be pretty soon. It's going to be pretty soon. It's going to be sooner than people would think. We're in a position to take care of our country, but at the same time to have the country really, really go up like a rocket ship economically. And that's great for jobs. It's great for everything else. Yeah.
Mr. President, I'd like to ask a question for a colleague who can't be in the room because of social distancing.
For who?
A colleague who can't be in the room because of our social distancing about Florida. Yeah. He wanted me to ask, should Governor DeSantis have closed all of the beaches in his state?
Well, that's really up to the governor. I mean, I think that, first of all, he's a great governor. He's done an incredible job, Governor DeSantis of Florida. And on the beaches, I guess he's recently made a decision, but you do have a lot of room on the beaches. And, you know, I think it's just a decision that that he made originally, and then he's refined it, and then he's done something that a lot of people agree with what he's done. But he's done a lot of things right. And he's been truly, he cares so much about health care. He cares so much about the cost of prescription drugs. He's been a fantastic governor for Florida. They're very happy with him. The whole concept of the beach, it's a very interesting issue. There are a lot of open spaces that includes parks and other things. But rather than relying on social distancing, they're probably going to do that one a different way. But I would imagine when we make our decision, things like that would be opened up. And then people will remember what they're supposed to be doing. Well, I want to thank everybody very much, and we'll see you tomorrow sometime. And we'll get this going, I think, really well. Thank you all very much.
That was President Donald Trump alongside Vice President Mike Pence. And Attorney General Bill Barr was there earlier, and Dr. Deborah Birx. That concludes the Coronavirus Task Force. We're going to reset with the station ID and then return for live continuing coverage ahead of a press conference, well, more of a statewide speech, an address by Governor Jay Inslee. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Governor Jay Inslee is slated to address the state 1 hour from now. We will be carrying it live right here on KTTH plus extended coverage. We're going to go live until 8 p.m. tonight. The expectation is that the governor is going to announce some kind of stay-at-home directive. That's exactly what Councilmember Reagan Dunn of King County Council is hoping for, and he joins me now. Councilmember Dunn, welcome back to the show.
Jason, thanks so much for having me.
So over the weekend and early today, we started to hear from your office. You want, at least from King County's perspective, to go into that stay-at-home order. Take us through your thinking.
Yeah, I actually communicated that to our King County Executive Dow Costine on Saturday. You know, we're just seeing this incredible spike in cases all across the world and, of course, now right here in the United States. I mean, we saw Italy nearly 800 people died day before yesterday, 650 new cases yesterday in terms of deaths, not alone just cases. So very significant challenge. The United States now is having a very big challenge across the country, places like New York, California, right here in Washington State. And so we're talking about as many as 7,000 people getting sick in New York just yesterday in one day alone. And so it really is time to throw everything at this and put a social distancing order in place that really requires folks to stay at home except for essential reasons.
So, Councilmember Dunn, there's some folks out there who will make the point that the mortality risk is very, very low, that essentially their argument is not that many people are dying, which is technically true, but that's not really all that this is about. The big picture here is about protecting our hospitals from getting overwhelmed, because then they're not going to be able to operate, not just in a sense of dealing with coronavirus patients who do need some significant care, but everybody else who's going in for a heart attack or a stroke.
Yeah, that's just it. The key is flattening the curve so not everyone is rushed to the hospital at the same time. If you want to see what happens, what it looks like when that happens, look at Italy right now. Jerusalem Post is reporting now that anybody over 60 and over is no longer getting access in Italy to the ventilator systems. They are focusing on patients who are younger because that has the higher probability of saving. We don't want to be in a situation like that. We want to flatten this curve. And actually, we're doing a pretty good job in King County and Washington State overall, at least so far. New York, New Jersey, all have both passed us by. We're about to be passed by Illinois, Louisiana, and Florida in terms of cases. And so we have flattened that curve, but we need to flatten it even more if we really truly want to maximize the survival rate. And so I understand folks are saying, you know, it's a low infection rate, but remember, here's the analysis. It's the burden on the individuals who are asking to stay home for a period of time. Is that burden equal to or less than the probability of widespread illness and death? The probability right now is high, and the outcome is death and is a very serious illness. So that's the balancing act that elected leaders right now are being forced to make. And so for me, better safe than sorry. When I met with Vice President Pence and the head of the CDC in a closed-door session a couple weeks ago, one of the things they were clear to me about, and a few others who were there, Bruce Dammeyer, was that, you know, if you're going to do these social distancing stay-at-home orders, they must be done at least 2 weeks in advance of a major spike in cases. And I would submit to you that time has come. In fact, it's probably passed, but we need to do it now. And I hope the governor has the wisdom and the advisors around him to make that order today. And then, you know, obviously we're going to carve out some exceptions for what's critical and what's absolutely mm-hmm. necessary so that society can keep going.
Like grocery stores, for example. If you're just joining me, we're sure. talking with King County Councilmember Reagan Dunn about his call to go to a stay-at-home or shelter-in-place scenario all across the state of Washington, but especially in King County. Governor Jay Inslee is expected to deliver a statewide address at 5:30, which we will be carrying live, followed by analysis until 8 p.m. Todd Herman's going to stop by at 7 p.m. to take over coverage at that point. There are some folks who are pointing out, I'm one of them, that law enforcement is not enforcing any of this. And so given what we saw over the weekend, especially in Seattle with Alki Beach and other parks getting completely overrun with people who are out there enjoying the sun, if there's not an enforcement mechanism, what makes you think a simple shelter-in-place directive is going to change the behaviors of folks if the sun continues to shine?
Well, the answer is I think it will change most people's behaviors. I think you're going to see 80 or 90% of the community comply with that order. You're always going to have a group of people. They tend to be younger folks who feel fairly indestructible, and free spirit folks who might not want to adhere to that. But as you're seeing, a lot of the spring breakers that were down in Florida are now getting sick. And so one of the things that the stay-at-home order will do is it will empower law enforcement to, you know, if they want to, even potentially cite folks for a mm-hmm. criminal violation. I hope that doesn't happen. That would have to be an extreme, extreme case of somebody literally flaunting their illness in some way. But the threat exists, and this morning I drove past a high school stadium football field where there was close to 25 kids playing soccer. Yes. And you know, that's not what we need. We don't need that. Those guys are breathing hard. They're kicking the ball around. They're they're huddling up, and then they're going to go home to their parents and grandparents and make them sick. So, you know, it's enormous sacrifice. We're asking folks to stay home except for essential services and where they need to get the medications or groceries. And, you know, we got our freedoms back, but we want to make it as many folks survive this pandemic and the least amount of human suffrage possible as we move through it.
Speak to the "we're going to get our freedoms back" argument, because I've heard from folks on the right, on my side, who are saying the government is going way too far. They have no right to stop me from leaving my home. What can you say to them?
Well, it's a fascinating experiment we're in with the United States Constitution and the state constitution. You know, there are fairly broad powers granted, some in the Constitution, certainly some in statute, that allow elected executives to make emergency decisions. And it goes back, and it's been used again and again through war and in some peace situations. And the job of other elected officials is to make sure that that use of power and authority is put in check, that it is balanced. And so one of the things that I'm keeping my eye on is making sure that individuals aren't overusing their emergency powers, or that they don't last too long, or that they don't use those emergency powers to somehow use as a pretext to get in policies that aren't related to the emergency at hand. And that's tricky, which is why, thank goodness, we have a variety of different checks and balances, including the court system that can shut down an executive order if it turns out that that is outside the scope of their authority or not used for a proper purpose.
King County Councilmember Reagan Dunn, thank you so much for stopping by. Really do appreciate it. Again, don't forget 5:30, so just a little bit under an hour from now, Governor Jay Inslee is going to address the state. We believe that it's going to be some kind of shelter-in-place order. It's not been confirmed at this point, but that's where we believe we're going to go. We'll check in with you, Councilmember, later on in the week to see where things are going. I appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, absolutely. Boy, and if the governor doesn't announce it today, I want a chance to get back on your radio show because I'll have some significant concerns. So thanks for having me on. I
appreciate it. Again, we're going to be carrying that speech live at 5:30.